As you start to reach more people, things start to feel more complex. There's more to do and more to keep track of, and it starts to actually take time away from creating content. I felt this struggle personally. The more creator science grew, the more it felt like I was dropping the ball. So I did something about it. I built a set of rock-solid systems, all in Notion, to support the business as we grew, and it worked like a charm. I've now taken my personal Notion setup and productized it. It's called Creator HQ, and it's the complete operating system that you need for your creator business. I built Creator HQ to be an all-in-one workspace designed to save you more time, create more content, and drive more revenue. By leveraging Creator HQ, we are publishing more than we ever have, and we're nearing $1 million in annual revenue because of it. It brings all of your data and processes into one place with custom-built dashboards to reduce friction in managing tasks, creating content, and collaborating with your team. I've seriously spent more than 3 years building this, and now you can have the same systems that I use right out of the box. In the lab, one of our members just posted, "I have spent the last few weeks diving into Creator HQ, learning how it works, and making it my own. This is the first time in a while that I've felt this organized and filled with hope that I can find a workflow that will work for me with my whole business. This is gold. I will definitely be giving a testimonial for this badass product." If you're new to Notion, don't worry. I've included a ton of specific tutorials to help you learn how to use Notion generally and Creator HQ specifically. I've never seen another Notion product integrate tutorials like we have here. More than 300 other creators are already using Creator HQ, and I am not exaggerating when I say I would be lost without this system. Creator HQ is what keeps the trains running over here. As a podcast listener, I'm giving you my best price. You can get 10% off using the promo code PODCAST at checkout. Just head to creatorhq.co to watch the video and learn more. That's creatorhq.co and use promo code PODCAST to save 10%.
They got 10,000 subscribers in the first 2 days.
Paid subscribers.
Paid subscribers.
Wow.
Paying $10 a month. So that is, you know, $1 million.
Hello, my friend. Welcome back to another episode of Creative Elements. Most weeks on this show, I'm speaking to an individual creator about their individual path. But sometimes I have the opportunity to talk to somebody who has a bird's eye view of what a lot of creators are doing at the same time. And so through their lens, through them, we're able to learn something that applies to us too. And that is the case for today's guest, Jason Su Hoy, the co-founder and CEO of Supercast. Supercast is a podcast subscription platform that helps podcasters, networks, and publishers earn money directly from their listeners. The top 10 podcasters on Supercast earn more than $12 million directly from their listeners. Now, Jason has a background in computer science. That's what he graduated university with. But after graduation, he took a slightly different path than you might expect.
Coming out of university, I joined a multinational called Unisys and was asked, you know, like, do you want to go down the engineering route or do you want to go down kind of more the business route? And I chose business because I had wider interests. And from very early on, you know, at school, I studied some accounting, you know, did some accounting papers. I did some, you know, kind of like genetics and biotech papers. So I had like broader interests.
Exploring those interests served Jason well. He started working at a company that gave him an opportunity to learn and an opportunity to lead. And that opportunity led to an even bigger opportunity.
And I joined a company called SitePoint to lead an agency division as the GM within that business. I took that role thinking, okay, well, I know how to lead an, you know, agency. I know how to do tech sales, but there is something else going on at this kind of like SitePoint business. And surely something will come of it.
What came after, as you'll soon hear, is the creation of 99 Designs, a global design marketplace. 99 Designs has had a lot of success. They have more than 1.6 million designers on the platform. And if you've heard of 99 Designs, you just may have heard of them on a podcast. They were early on in podcast advertising, and they advertised a lot on the Tim Ferriss show in particular.
I myself, you know, became an avid Tim Ferriss listener, and I started adopting his workout regime, and I started adopting, you know, the low carb diet. And, you know, before I knew it, I had spent, you know, like tens and hundreds of hours, you know, kind of like listening to his content and just, you know, felt that draw, that influence that, you know, someone like that can have on your life when you really tune into it to a podcast.
That started Jason down the path of studying podcasting. So in this episode, we talk about Jason's path to Supercast, when a premium podcast subscription makes sense, what type of incentives to create to get someone to pay for a podcast, and why none of this is possible without experimentation. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at jklaus, or leave a comment on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to the channel if you have not already. That's enough of me. Let's talk with Jason.
But the reason I joined SitePoint is because they had so many other interesting things going on the side. They had a publishing division. You know, they were producing all of these books. They had partnerships with O'Reilly, for example, and they were creating all of these books and tutorials around like how to build your first website with PHP and MySQL. So that was pretty interesting. But then they also had this forum with, I think at the time, you know, like when I looked at the website of SitePoint.com, it had this forum and it said 874,336 members, subscribers. And I was like, what is that? And so I dived into it. And in this forum, there was just like this sprawling community of web developers and web designers who were just trying to figure out ways to be better at their craft. You know, they were in there, you know, on a daily basis, you know, talking to each other and you know, just challenging each other and sharing information. You know, that forum was actually pivotal to a number of different businesses that would spin out of the wider SitePoint umbrella. The way 99 Designs came about is that within this kind of like really organic forum, designers in one particular forum thread just started competing against each other to prove who was the better designer.
Oh.
So it was just like this really fun way for them to level up their skills, challenge each other, and you know, just play around with tools. So one designer would come up with a fictional brief, you know, like and post it and say, hey, you know, like how about we design brochures these days for a grocery company? And the other designers, you know, two or three would battle it out. And you know, there would be various forms. They called it Photoshop tennis at one stage where, you know, basically you would pass around a file and see who could, you know, like make it better in different ways. And along came one day this person who said, look, I'm a web designer. I design websites, but one of my clients has asked me for a logo. I don't do logos. Here's the brief. I'll put up $100 and whoever can design me the best logo gets the money.
Wow.
And so these designers loved it. Like, that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, they were kind of like being offered money for something that they were doing for fun anyway. So this little forum thread just started to blow up as a way to get, you know, like lots of creative ideas for things like logos in a really affordable way and you know, in a way that, you know, just flipped the traditional design model on its head. You know, you didn't have to try to pick a designer based on their portfolio, you know, like it was just, you know, kind of like show me what you got. And so it started, you know, all this organic traffic started coming to this forum thread. And so before we even knew the term MVP, minimum viable product, you know, like what we did at SitePoint was just to say, well, maybe there's a business here, you know. And so the first step was simply to lock that forum thread. So we locked that forum thread and made it $10 to post a job, a request into that thread and thought, well, this will probably kill it. But it didn't kill it. It just validated that all of a sudden this was a place to actually go and get design, and it started, you know, like accelerating even more. So we doubled the price to $20. And more people came, you know, like now businesses were coming wanting, you know, actual assets created. And so, you know, several more steps later, it was clear that this was a separate business opportunity. And so that forum thread became a tab on SitePoint. So it became like SitePoint Design Contests. And then the next iteration was to split it out as its own separate brand. And that's when it became 99designs.com.
Wild. And at that point, did you jump in as the executive in charge of operating that business?
So basically I'd been at, you know, SitePoint for 3 months. The founder had just decided, okay, this is a real thing. I need to build a team around it. He knows, you know, like kind of, he's very self-aware of like his skill sets and what gets him interested. He knows that once something gets to about 4 or 5 people, he's got to find someone else to run the business because, you know, he starts to kind of like, you know, lose it with, you know, managing projects and all that sort of stuff. It's just not his bag. That's when I came on board basically as the GM, you know, COO of the business. It was a wild ride. You know, I was at 99 Designs for over a decade, you know, multiple kind of like business lines and opportunities within that, expanded the team, you know, from just being bootstrapped for the first 3 years, predominantly based in Australia, to, you know, having a big presence in California and then also Berlin, raising, you know, venture funding with Excel Partners 3 years in, and then ultimately leading to an acquisition by Vistaprint just a couple of years ago.
That's amazing. I would have never guessed that was the origin story for 99 Designs, that it evolved organically out of this forum as friendly competition that people were having with each other just for fun and for competition. That's so interesting that you noticed that it evolved. I mean, this is really talking to the power of community, which I'm sure we'll talk about here soon, but to notice that evolving and then say, there's something here, let's play around with this and see where it could lead. Just fascinating origin story.
Right.
Here's a question that I don't get to ask a lot of people, but I feel like you would have some unique insight into. I feel a lot of tension between the identity phrases of creative, as in like a creative, and creators. Today with Supercast, you work with a lot of creators. 99 Designs probably felt more like creatives in, you know, the early 2010s. How do you think about those two words? Are those two different types of people to you? Because to me, it kind of seems like they might be, but it's hard for me to differentiate.
You know, there is a way of looking at creatives that says, hey, you know, like you come up with a brief or you give them, you know, kind of tell them a little bit about their business and they go wild with their creative ideas, you know, like, and they throw you a whole lot of stuff that you in no way could have done on your own. And, you know, like you contribute to the process and you come out, you know, with a logo that just looks, you know, like incredible. You know, like that's one way of thinking about a creative. But even within that spectrum at 99 Designs, there's, you know, there's the whole range of, you know, kind of like creatives within that umbrella. So you get people that are more that artist type, you know, like that, you know, like sure, they will get some inspiration from like the business that you have, your business name, etc. But then, you know, they're more towards the Michelangelo end of the spectrum, right? Where they will come up with something incredible that might fit your needs or might not fit your needs. And, you know, you might be able to bend them or you might not be able to bend them, you know, like, and they're somewhat, you know, like set in, you know, kind of like how much inspiration they'll let you kind of like play. At the other end of the spectrum, there are the people that are just great at like graphic design execution, you know, like they're not really, you know, like gonna come up with the, you know, kind of artistic flair, but what they'll do is that, you know, they're really good at, you know, kind of pumping out iterations and executions and you know, like more or less coming up with, you know, like what you're asking for visualized, you know, in kind of the form that you need it. I think now that we think about, you know, kind of like broadening out from like graphic design and all of the places that a creator can, you know, kind of exist on the internet, the term creator, I think, you know, like broadens significantly. And in the context of podcasters, it's just, you know, a lot looser of a term. Anybody that, you know, is basically creating content these days, we bring under the umbrella of creator. You know, writers, podcasters, etc. And you know, I guess to your point, is an interviewer of an interview style podcast, you know, like, are they, do you think about them as a creative in that same sense? I think of it these days as, you know, like somebody that is creating content. And so, yeah, I think it's like less connected to kind of like the purest art form of a particular medium.
Yeah, it's weird. I think about it a lot just because my target audience are people who identify as creators. And what I find are there are a lot of people who identify as creatives that don't quite identify as a creator. They don't know what that term really means, but it's kind of like a rectangle square situation in my experience where creators identify also as creatives, but not all creatives identify as creators. But at the end of the day, whatever somebody identifies with as a creative or creator, they're making things. Mm-hmm. They're solving problems with their creativity. They're making something, whether it's for one individual as a client or for an audience or for hopeful mass appeal. It's just interesting. I think the term creator is still in its infancy a little bit, and people are becoming more aware of it, more accustomed to it, warming up to it maybe. Yeah, it's an interesting struggle that I have with a show called Creative Elements serving creators.
And I think it also, you know, like has just opened up dramatically with how easy it is to create content, you know, on the internet these days, right? I mean, like anybody can fire up TikTok or whatever and start becoming a creator, right? You know, just by virtue of the fact that they're putting content out into the world. So it makes sense that, you know, some of these terms are looser than we originally designed them for.
After a quick break, Jason and I talk about why he believes so deeply in podcasts and the opportunity for podcasters to earn money directly from their listeners. And later, we talk about the economics and incentives for creating a compelling premium podcast feed. So stick around and we'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Last year, my wife and I started talking about her joining the business full time. This is a huge decision, not just for the business, but for our marriage. My wife, being the very smart and thoughtful woman that she is, suggested that we proactively sign up for therapy as a couple to help us communicate better before we started working together. It really helped us have better language to describe how we're feeling and listen to one another, which generally lowers the intensity of any conversation. Now, I had never been in therapy before, but here's something that I didn't expect. It didn't just help our dialogue, but it helped my inner monologue too. The way I understand my own experience has changed based on the tools that I got from therapy. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's convenient, it fits your schedule, and you can be in the comfort of your own home. Just fill out a short questionnaire and you'll get matched with a licensed therapist. They even make it easy to switch therapists if it doesn't feel like a fit. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/creator today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/creator. This episode is sponsored by Podcast Movement. For the past decade, Podcast Movement has organized the world's largest gathering of podcasters, featuring thousands of attendees, hundreds of breakout sessions, panels, and workshops, plus the largest trade show in podcasting. Podcast Movement helps podcasters of all experience levels create, grow, and profit from their show. It's suitable for beginners, but you'll also have the opportunity to meet some of the biggest names in the industry. I've been to several Podcast Movement events, and not only is the programming incredible, but the culture and vibe are incredible too. It attracts thoughtful, empathetic, and collaborative people, which makes sense when you think about the medium of podcasting. Podcast Movement hosts two events per year. The first just wrapped up, but their flagship conference is happening August 19th through the 22nd in Washington, D.C. Attendees have the freedom to choose their own adventure across several different stages throughout the four-day event, not to mention dozens of amazing networking events, parties, and the expo hall floor. Tracks include podcast creation, video and live streaming, industry professional, plus several stages of curated programming from some of the top companies in podcasting. It's truly a unique event, and if you are a podcaster, I cannot recommend it enough. Right now, tickets are available at super duper early bird pricing. And as a Creator Science listener, you can save $50 on top of that by visiting podcastmovement.com/science. That's podcastmovement.com/science. Welcome back to my conversation with Jason Sue Hoy. Jason has been building Supercast for the last 3 years, and to dedicate 3 years of your life to podcasts means that you probably have a deep love of the medium. So I asked Jason where his appreciation for podcasts came from.
About halfway through the 99 Designs journey, actually probably even earlier, this guy by the name of Tim Ferriss, he came into contact with 99 Designs and he expressed a frustration that the designers at his publishing company that were working on his second book just, you know, weren't hitting it out of the park with the cover design concepts that they were sending him to him. And so he wanted to use the platform 99 Designs to come up with some better designs and, you know, really throw it out to the creative community. And so we worked with Tim to do that. And, you know, that's how the cover design for the 4-hour body actually came about. But then, you know, sometime after that, Tim decided to launch a podcast. When he did, you know, like shortly after, he said he turned around to us and having worked with us before and knowing that, you know, like we, you know, our core customer base was kind of, you know, entrepreneurs and people that were starting things. He asked us whether we would come on board as the first sponsor. And so we leapt at the chance. And that show, you know, has become one of the, has been, you know, since we started, one of the most wonderful acquisition channels for new people launching, you know, design projects on 99 Designs for a number of different reasons. You know, like, I mean, Tim is Tim, you know, like I think it, basically anything that, you know, he recommends, you know, his audience.
I think he refers to it as the hug of death, actually.
Right. And you know, the second thing is, you know, but the fact that he had used the service meant that his read, you know, like his endorsement for 99 Designs was just like so authentic. He would talk about, you know, basically all the cover designs, you know, like flying in and it feeling like, you know, kind of Christmas every time, you know, and just so much creativity. And so, you know, number one, it generated great business for us, you know, like so that was, you know, like where I experienced, you know, like just the intimate connection that a host can have, you know, with their listener base in terms of like providing those recommendations. And so that was my first experience with, you know, podcasting as a medium. And then towards the end of my time at 99 Designs, I got talking to Andrew Wilkinson, who heads a group called Tiny up in Canada, but basically a family of, you know, like internet companies, some of which, you know, kind of like started in the design world. So MetaLab, for example, prolific design agency, Dribbble, you know, huge design network, you know, just a whole bunch of other, you know, wonderful companies as well. And he'd started working with Sam Harris, and Sam Harris had built up a big Patreon, but then, you know, like just basically decided, you know, that was too clunky, you know, an experience for most of his subscriber base. You know, they were going from listening to his podcast, you know, loving, you know, his content, wanting more bonus content and being willing to pay, but then kind of like stuck in this experience where they were signing up for a Patreon account. And then, you know, after having done so, you know, looking at a wall that resembled Facebook, as opposed to just wanting to listen to more content, you know, and being in you know, the podcast world. And so Sam wanted us to build, you know, basically the founding team of Supercast to build his own bespoke solution. And we did so and launched it to, you know, enormous success. And in doing so, got a front seat to, you know, just how, you know, kind of how much money a podcast membership can generate, a podcast subscription can generate. And it resembles, you know, the metrics resemble a great software business. And that's what kind of like blew our minds. And we thought, wow, is this just Sam's audience, you know, like, or is this something that, you know, is more widely applicable? And so we worked with a couple of other podcasters, Peter Attia in the health and longevity space, and Rhonda Patrick also, and she talks a lot about saunas and basically deconstructing and keeping up to date with like the latest in science and health research to bring that, you know, to into layman's terms and, you know, how we can live healthier lives. And their audiences both, you know, like blew up as well in terms of like their memberships and just transformed their ability to do more research and create, you know, like more incredible content for their communities.
When you say that Sam's podcast on Supercast, the premium version, launched a tremendous success, can you quantify tremendous success a little bit to give people a taste of what is possible?
Sam was the precursor to Supercast. So that was him paying us on an agency basis to build out a subscription solution, which, you know, like Sam, that, you know, owns and runs himself. But, you know, since Sam, you know, a number of customers have launched on Supercast. And so the example that I will give, because I know they're happy to meet with me to, you know, share these numbers, is Breaking Points. And so Breaking Points was, or the precursor to Breaking Points was a show called Rising on the Hill, which is a, you know, DC media outlet. Crystal and Saga are the co-hosts of Breaking, of the Hill, of the Rising, sorry. And they decided, you know, that they would go independent from the Hill and start their own show called Breaking Points, which launched in June of last year. So nearly a year. They were going to be basically starting from zero. You know, it would be a brand new YouTube channel, a brand new podcast. They'd never done a podcast before, but they had, you know, kind of like built, you know, kind of Instagrams and YouTubes. And they would power that all with a Supercast subscription. So you might find them on YouTube, you might find them a podcast, but either way, to get, you know, kind of early access to the show, you would sign up on Supercast and you could consume that either in like video or audio form. And so when I say, you know, like they launched to tremendous success, they got 10,000 subscribers in the first 2 days.
Paid subscribers.
Paid subscribers.
Wow.
Paying $10 a month. So that is, you know, $1 million, you know, like, you know, in terms of like annual revenue, like straight off the bat, which blew their mind. Like they did not anticipate that whatsoever. You know, like when we had kind of like kicked around ideas and projections and estimates and things like that, you know, we'd kind of like modeled it out and thought, okay, well, we might get that, you know, like at the end of the first year. Honestly, like it was just, you know, wild seeing all that number of subscriptions flowing in, you know, like within the first 2 days. 40% of those paid annually. So they paid $100 up front as opposed to the $10 monthly. And then they actually included a lifetime membership option as well for $1,500. Like $1,500 is a one-off payment. Mm-hmm. And I think at this point, over 700 people have paid that for that lifetime membership.
That's crazy. So 700 people expect that they would be annual members for more years, than 15 basically. Years.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's a lot of trust in the creator. We're so early in this creator economy. There aren't that many people that have been doing any type of creator business for 15 years.
Right. So I actually think it's that particular part of it. I think it's less about the, you know, kind of like sizing up. Am I going to be a member for 20 years? You know, like, and
it's,
you know,
it's like not the pure like financial side of it. It's them saying like, I get so much value out of this that I want to support you
right
in this way.
It's exactly. It's mission. It's so there. And, you know, like to explain a little bit about, you know, kind of like why that took off the way they did. They've really zeroed in on, you know, who their audience is. The makeup of, you know, Crystal and Saga is that from a political point of view, Saga is on the right, Crystal's on the left. In any given show, so they publish three times a week in the mornings, and it's news and it's politics, and it looks a lot like a cable news show. And, you know, they very specifically went after that so that, you know, you or I, for example, if we were sending a clip to our parents and saying, hey, yeah, look at this, I told you inflation was going to be going up, you know, like our parents wouldn't dismiss it because it looks like a YouTube show. It looks super professional. You know, Saga put a lot of money into designing his desk, his Perspex desk there. And because they bring, you know, kind of that diversity of viewpoint, people really value the debate, which is often missing in mainstream media. And of course, you know, if you look at charts of trust in mainstream media, you know, it's fallen to all-time lows, you know, like from a, you know, kind of widespread population point of view. And so that's what Crystal and Saga really zeroed in on. And they said, you know, like basically we want our boss to be our audience. You know, we don't want to be at the whim of, you know, corporate sponsors and all that sort of stuff. We don't want to be biased, and we want to bring you, you know, like that unbiased perspective. And so they really kind of like brought the listeners into supporting that mission. And that is what I think has really resonated with people.
I'm looking at some of the things they're promising here. So they have ad-free uncut. So it's like the ad-free version of the show, it sounds like. Then they have exclusive reactions to each other's monologues.
Right.
Weekly access to a premium only Ask Me Anything episode. Twice monthly exclusive long form discussions. That's a lot of things. Is that typical for Supercast users that are doing well to be offering five different perks to their premium members? Or do you see people offering fewer things? Because I think a lot of the people who consider this, one of the big concerns they have is, can I sustain whatever it is that I need to promise to get people to follow through on purchasing a membership?
Yeah, it's probably, you know, the biggest concern of creators. And it's a very fair concern. And, you know, what we try to do, you know, being the kind of like the platform that supports creators, is just to work out, you know, like how we can guide them to not overcommit. Like the last thing we want them to do is like to have to double their, you know, creative workload. So that's why we're built out, you know, like to give you a, you know, kind of like direct answer. We look for opportunities, again, with that curiosity to build certain things to make it easier. So the AMAs, for example, that is powered by a specific function on Supercast. We have an AMA portal, basically a page where as soon as someone becomes a member, they can submit questions. It'll, you know, kind of auto-suggest questions that have already been asked. They can upvote other people's questions instead. And then as a creator, you know, when you come to do those AMA episodes once a week, once every 2 weeks, you just kind of like pick out three or four that you want to answer, record one episode, and then you can timestamp where the answers appear so that, you know, there's basically a workflow, you know, and it's not too much logistically for you to manage.
So for folks who are using this Q&A feature, are they making that episode only available to listen to for paid subscribers? Or is it sometimes used as, hey, paid subscribers can ask the questions, we release that episode for anybody to listen to?
There is a trick, you know, basically to fueling the growth of your community, where you use some of your premium content as teasers on your public feed. And so people like Sam Harris, people like Peter Attia, they do this extraordinarily well. And so what you do is you record an AMA episode. Let's call, you know, say, you know, AMA episode number 30. And you choose, of course, you know, which five questions you want to answer. And say you spend an hour answering those questions. What you would do is you would put that on the private feed on Supercast so that, you know, all of the members get that immediately. And also all of the people that upvoted or asked a question would get email notified saying, hey, your question's been answered. But then you can also take the first, say, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever you choose, and put a snippet of that onto your public feed to give people a taste of, you know, like what they were beginning if they were a premium member. And then, you know, kind of like cutting, you know, obviously, you know, when the teaser finishes with a call to subscribe to the premium feed to be able to ask your own questions or to be able to, you know, to continue listening. I think that's a really, really important point because it also applies to a lot of, you know, what you just listed out on the Breaking Points page. Some of those five things that you mentioned are actually not that difficult. You know, they're not, you know, a ton of extra work. And the important thing is that they also provide a teaser of an opportunity to subscribe organically that doesn't feel like an ad. And so to be more specific about that, the second point was the reaction to each other's monologues. And again, this is something that Crystal and Saga, you know, that was their idea. You know, like they really paid attention to what their audience values about the show. And the fact that there's two hosts, what happens is, each of them in every episode presents a monologue. So Saga, for example, might do a 5-minute segment on GameStop. You know, everyone's wondering what's going on with GameStop. And he will do a 5-minute monologue deconstructing all of that. And then after the monologue, he'll turn to Crystal and say, okay, so what do you think, Crystal? And so that's where you get, you know, kind of the debate on the show, right? Mm-hmm. And at that point on the public feed is when it cuts off and it says,
but we need your help. So if you can help us out by becoming a premium member today at breakingpoints.com, we're trying to change America for the better and the entire world.
So what are you waiting for, guys? Go to breakingpoints.com and sign up and help us build a new mainstream.
You know, yes, you are missing out on a bit that, you know, you like you would have loved. But, you know, you have to have that little bit of tension there. You know, you have to have that healthy tension of, oh, this is something, you know, like I really wanted to hear, as well as, you know, like the way to get it so that in every single episode, you remind people, you know, like why they should sign up.
When we come back, Jason and I talk about the economics and incentives for offering a paid podcast subscription and when you should start considering offering one for your listeners. So stick around and we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back. Over the last couple of years, I've thought about offering a premium subscription for listeners of this show. But my hangup has been, what am I providing those premium subscribers every week? Now, the obvious answer is an ad-free feed. So I asked Jason if offering an ad-free feed is enough to attract paid subscribers.
So, you know, I think about these things in the context of conversion rate, you know, and ultimately that means, you know, like, you know, if you have 10,000 listeners per episode, how many of those, you know, can you get over to being paid subscribers? And so, just to really explain the model, we don't really have anybody that just slams the paywall down hard and says, okay, this is not going to be a free podcast anymore. Like you need to pay, you know, to listen to anything. And we certainly wouldn't recommend that either because, you know, the free podcast one, you know, like this is what you built to date, you know, like, and this is what listeners are coming for. And then secondly, it's also the top of your funnel. It's how you continue to grow both your free and your paid audience in future. So it'd be short-sighted, you know, to slam the paywall down. But rather, you know, like we think about this idea of, you know, what if 5% of your audience were to pay you $10 a month? What if 5% of your audience were to pay you $10 a month? And that gets at a few things, you know, like it's a monthly subscription, but, you know, like it's really for the 1,000 true fans, you know, to quote Kevin Kelly's, you know, model. And it means that 95% of your audience can still just enjoy your content for free. Maybe they're still trying it out. Maybe they just discovered it today. Or maybe, you know, they just can't afford it and you know, like are okay, you know, like listening to the free content. But for the people that do love you and want to support you or want to get that extra bonus stuff, they have the ability to upgrade themselves, you know, into that higher paying thing where you're earning a much, much better return than even, you know, kind of like advertising CPM rates.
Is 5% the bar that you give people to shoot for or expect when they put in place a premium feed?
So we generally quote between 2% and 7%. The way I catch it is, and going back to your original question, if you do the easy lift stuff like ad-free, like early access, for example, maybe, you know, restricting access to your back catalog. I would anticipate, you know, like if you just have a one or a couple of those things, you would be, you know, maybe even 1%, you know, 1% conversion rate, 1-2%. So it'd be at the bottom end of that spectrum. But as you start to overlay bonus episodes, AMAs, maybe access to a private Slack community, Circle community, Slack group, you know, paid newsletter. So within Supercast, we've also built in the functionality to send out email newsletters, you know, to your subscriber group as well. As you start to like overlay some of these other additional things, that's when you can push up into the higher, like kind of 5-7% range. We've looked at our top 20 on Supercast, our top 20 biggest audiences, subscriptions, and those creators are averaging right on 5%. So that's where I get the number from. Obviously, you know, they've been at it a while. Anybody launching today, you know, is not going to achieve that in the first month, but it gives you a sense of like what's possible. And moreover, the top 10 creators on Supercast are grossing over $12 million in aggregate per year through subscriptions alone. So when you get it right, you know, like this is a very, very lucrative revenue generator for a podcast business.
Talk to me about the teams of some of the creators you support. I would imagine, you know, those top 10 creators probably already had a team in place before they were doing a premium feed. And so they might even have some like capacity to help with the operations of this type of thing. What proportion of your users are independent podcasters that are able to support this themselves, or maybe like a part-time assistant? Do you have any data on that?
I mean, anecdotally, you know, because I know, you know, some of them pretty well, you know, certainly they've pushed beyond, you know, them being an individual person in those cases. I mean, it's still an independent person in most cases doing the podcast itself, you know, like doing the interviews and so on. But in a lot of cases, you know, like they have someone else, you know, producing, you know, doing all the sound stuff, you know, producing the episodes. And they might have someone else, you know, just, you know, basically being a community person, depending on, you know, how big the paying membership is. So, you know, I would say they are smallish teams still, you know, it would still be within the realms of, you know, like 2 to 4 people. And then, you know, the rest of the organization really depends on, you know, like what kind of business they are around that. So Rhonda Patrick or Peter Attia, for example, you know, they might have, you know, people that are doing research or, you know, like digesting scientific articles to like, you know, kind of come up with the content that ultimately gets surfaced on the podcast and other mediums as well.
Yeah. I'm thinking about this from the standpoint of a lot of my listeners tend to be earlier in their creator journey. And if they are podcasters, they ask me about ads a lot. And how big they need to be for ads. And I explain, well, it depends on what you're talking about. Like if you're doing a CPM model, which is cost per mila, which is cost per 1,000 impressions, the bar is a lot higher. You can still do direct sales and do baked in ads and make good money below that bar. And I think that having a membership is attractive to that audience, as well as somebody who's more advanced and realizes there's a stream of revenue here I could turn on. And so for the folks who are earlier stage, who feel like they aren't quite big enough to play the CPM game, but they've been podcasting for a while, I'm trying to identify when a membership program and feed like this might make sense. Is there still a download threshold? Is it about the length of time you've been podcasting and build up trust with those listeners? What do you think for that type of creator?
Get this question all the time. And generally the way that I think about it is less about overall size. So, you know, there's no arbitrary cutoffs, which is, you know, like kind of a good thing. And you know, I first want to say, I just want to dispel this idea that, you know, like it has to be one or the other in terms of advertising or subscription. And actually the way, you know, we talked about ad free, hopefully it's obvious, you know, like that the presence of ads creates the opportunity, you know, to create an ad-free premium feed, or that is a benefit. So the two can actually work wonderfully well together. And then you have, you know, kind of a great business that, you know, has two, you know, great revenue streams. And a lot of our top 10, you know, like have the two, which, you know, just stands them in really good stead. But as it relates to, you know, like size specifically for the podcast, I like to think of it, you know, we talked about that idea of like a minimum viable product, you know, like, in startup world, there's another concept called product market fit, which is, you know, how do you know when your startup, you know, has kind of like got something that's ready to scale, you know, like you've discovered something that people actually like, that people actually will pay for. And, you know, like you can start to hire a bigger team around because it's, you know, all the signs are there that it's going to take off. And so I think similarly, there's this, I like to think about this idea of like podcast market fit. You know, there are markets out there. and you're creating a podcast, how do you know that you've captured people's attention and that, you know, like they're tuning in on a repeat basis and it's going to grow over time? So, you know, the way I kind of think about it, you know, like if you're producing episode after episode after episode and the numbers are kind of, they're not growing, you know, like maybe you're getting like 80 downloads an episode and it just, it seems like, you know, tried a bunch of things and it just doesn't get past 80, then I think you're way too early to start thinking about monetization of any form. You know, like I think that's just a distraction from what you should be really focused on, which is getting that podcast market fit. Mm. You know, it's like, okay, mm-hmm. change it up, you know, like change up the distribution, change up, you know, the content format. You want to find something that hits with your audience. And when you know, you will know, you know, like when it starts to grow and it, you know, like you continue to put out episodes and, you know, like you're pleasantly surprised every time you go back and check into, you know, like your analytics dashboard that, you know, like you're getting, you know, more downloads and it feels like you're onto something, you know, like at that point, you know, like I think that's when you can start to think about, okay, well, how could I experiment with giving people a premium experience that they can opt in for. And also you'll know it because people will be asking you, people will be emailing you, you know, be asking for other things. They'll be asking, you know, like, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? And those are good signs that you have, you know, good retention and good engagement. And that is, you know, basically the underpinnings, I think, of the true fan model. You know, it's like you want to find the, you know, the core 100,000 people, you know, like that, you know, just want to see you succeed and, you know, that they've made you a part, you know, of their kind of like regular habits. And, you know, beyond that, it's really, you know, like at what point do the numbers become meaningful to you? So let's say you had, you know, 1,000 downloads per episode, or let's call it 10,000, you know, for easy maths, 10,000 downloads per episode. You know, like if you had 5%, then that's, you know, 500 premium members, you know, like paying $10 a month, that's, you know, $5,000 a month, $60,000 a year. You know, does $60,000 a year for that creative effort where you've got 10,000 downloads per episode, is that meaningful to you as an incremental revenue stream that also in turn, you know, draws you closer to your community? Obviously, you can play those numbers up and down. You know, if it was only $5 a month you're charging, that's $30,000 a year. But I think most creators would agree that, you know, like just it gives you optionality. You know, we just talked about building out a team, you know, like 30,000, 60,000, that can get you a lot of services, you know, like yeah. That all of a sudden you don't have to be doing and means that you can free up some time to focus on growth or, you know, like more content or, you know, whatever it is. So the return piece, once you've got the fit, you know, and you feel like the engagement's there, the return piece and whether it's worth it and finding, you know, kind of like the secret, you know, like the secret formula or the right formula for you in terms of like effort invested to returns is just, you know, a matter of like basically testing your way into it and then seeing, you know, how you build that over time.
We mentioned these kind of in passing, but I want to explicitly list out some of the most popular value propositions that you're seeing with your creators on the platform. We had ad-free feeds. We had listener Q&A functionality. Mm-hmm. We had bonus episodes. What else did you mention there?
I'll divide this into two camps. So I'll start with like the easy lift stuff. So kind of like repackaging existing content. You can kind of like think of it that way. So ad free is one of them. You just take out the ads, you know, they're pretty easy. Early access. So again, it just means that you might be giving episodes. So Shane Parrish of the Knowledge Project, for example, you know, he's done this a few times. He did an interview with Bill Ackman, you know, and he said, hey, just did an incredible interview with Bill. Premium members, you know, like get this 2 weeks early. Similarly, you know, like binge access, you know, if you're doing a series, if you've got a series of content, being able to binge that all as opposed to like waiting, you know, every single week for a new episode to drop, you know, like it's a really kind that's of like cool neat idea that again, just makes use of windowing, right? It's just time. Extended interviews. So, you know, think about this interview that we're doing right now. Imagine if like you saved, you know, like 3 or 4 questions for, you know, kind of like a behind the scenes or, you know, the extended portion of our interview. Or similarly, you know, like in post-production, you were to just chop out one segment of our conversation and then say, hey, if you want to hear, you know, Jason talked about, you know, what aspects of a premium subscription, you know, like convert the best, then, you know, sign up to a premium member. And so you chop that 5 minutes out and it gives you, again, that organic opportunity to say, you know, like, this is what you're missing out on, you know, like, and so, you know, there's a whole lot of tricks there. Back catalog access. So a lot of people, if you've done, you know, hundreds of episodes, it often gets to a point where a public feed becomes a little bit too unwieldy anyway to have, you know, like, all of those episodes. So you can start to remove, so, you know, there's quite a few podcasters that after 6 months, they take episodes off the back and put it into their premium collection. So that's kind of repackaging. And then on the new content side, you know, the bonus content side, yeah, you could have interviews with VIP guests that, you know, you only get as a premium subscriber. You could have AMAs where you're, you know, answering questions. You could have newsletter content, for example, where you get access to written form stuff as well as, you know, the podcast, and then access to a community is another popular one. So that's where you're kind of like changing the dynamic a little bit from being, hey, I'm paying for just access to you as the host, to I'm paying to access to other people that, you know, also share my passion. So there's a customer we have, a podcast by the name of Reality Cray Cray, you know, that springs out as an example here. They have this, they all they do is cover the show 90 Day Fiancé, the reality show. You know, it's kind of like a post-episode, you know, kind of commentary show. They don't even use their real names. They use pseudonyms, you know, like because of the, yeah, exactly, the nature of the content. He works in tech, or he did work in tech, you know, Kyle as a pseudonym goes. We've interviewed him on our podcast, Supercasters, and he tells a story about, you know, how he works in tech. He's always had, you know, like great jobs, you know, like that he's really, really enjoyed, really, really, really fulfilled. But then he's podcasting under the pseudonym with this community and creating a Facebook group where he's got over 5,000 people, probably, you know, six or seven now, where people just love the show and they, you know, now, you know, they're just talking about their hobbies, sharing pictures of their children, you know, like just, you know, really expanding beyond the premise of, you know, the show itself. So much so that he's quit his career in tech and gone all in, you know, like on being a podcaster for this show. It's, you know, just an incredible story. You know, that's another one where you're creating, you know, like kind of brand new content, but it doesn't necessarily need to be you, you know, like leading everything from the front.
How do I think about pricing this thing? Not even just the price, but does it need to be monthly? Can it be annual only? How would you recommend people start thinking about that?
So I'm going to leverage that framework that I painted out before in terms of like the easy stuff and then kind of like the bonus stuff. So in the same way that, you know, I think about like conversion rates being that 2 to 7% range, if you're doing the easier stuff, ad-free, so on, then I wouldn't go above $5. You know, I keep it $5 and, you know, kind of see how that resonates with your audience. As you layer on the bonus content, that's where you push up into the $10, $15 a month range, you know, and we have a lot of our podcasters, you know, like charging, you know, at that, you know, kind of the premium end of the spectrum. So I would say in most cases, podcasters undersell themselves, you know, like I see on Patreon, for example, you know, people that are kind of like doing $1 tiers, $2 tiers. I honestly don't like to see that because that sets too low a floor. And really, I feel like most creators, you know, like are just not valuing their time and their content highly enough, you know, when they do that, which then has a flow on effect, you know, like to how listeners perceive, you know, the value of your content. So that's how I think about the price. And then, you know, like going back to, you know, what we were talking about before, really both price and conversion rate, again, it's not, I wouldn't think about it so much like in terms of like how long you've been doing it or how big your audience is, because we have some audiences that are, call it the $5,000, 5,000 downloads per episode, you know, so not huge pods, but they are converting at like 50%. I'm not kidding you. Like they're converting at 50% on a, I'm pretty sure it's a $10 price point.
Wow.
So, and I'm not going to say that's everyone. I'm not going to say that that's typical, but I'm going to say that it's possible. You know, like if you have the right fit, if you get your kind of like the strategy down and, you know, just, a message and a good read that articulates the value of what you're doing and, you know, how, you know, listeners can kind of like get access to the premium content, then yeah, the numbers can work in your favor.
Do you have any data to suggest that it makes sense to offer monthly? And I ask that because in the community world, I'm seeing more and more of a trend to moving away from monthly recurring and just doing biannual or annual pricing. And I wonder what your reaction to that is in a premium podcast feed world.
Where an annual plan is offered, and often it's offered with, you know, kind of a couple of months free. So, you know, it's like $10 per month or $100 a year, let's say, which, you know, essentially saves you $20 on the annual. We would see about 40% uptake on the annual, 40 to 50% uptake, which
seems pretty high.
It's high. It's higher than I was expecting. Or that I would have, you know, expected prior to rolling any of those out. I think for a podcast, it's high because people have already had a taste of what your content is. You know, like in most cases, they've been listening for a while now to your free podcast. And so they're bought in on your mission. They're bought in on who you are. They know that they love your content. They know that they're going to love all of the bonuses. And therefore, when they're presented with the option, you know, are you going to be listening to this for a year? Yeah. You know, like I've been listening to 2 years already, you know. So at that point, you know, it's a fairly easy decision for them to say, yeah, okay, I'll save a bit. No, you know, I want to support Jay. So I think we see a higher proportion of the annual, but most people that we have would still offer the option of a monthly.
I think this is a really good look at how and when podcasters might want to offer a premium subscription to their subscribers. If you want to learn more about Supercast and how you can do just that, go to supercast.com. Thanks to Jason for being on the show. Thank you to Connor Conaway for editing this episode and Nathan Todhunter for mixing the audio. Thank you to Brian Seal for creating our music and Emily Klaus for making the podcast artwork. I'd love to hear what you think about this episode. You can tweet at me at jklaus. Let me know. Leave a comment here on YouTube and be sure to subscribe if you haven't already. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next week.
The Podglomerate. A Sonic Universe.